Well, following on from our chat a few weeks ago with Dr. Simon Carruthers of the Old Fire Station Surgery here in Beverley on the subject of skin cancer, my thoughts then turned to diabetes, mindful that Dr. Carruthers specialises in prevention rather than the cure of ailments and diseases. And my interest in diabetes having been caught by a recent media article I'd read that stated that Diabetes UK have reported there's been a rise of 39% in under 40s being identified with diabetes too, often called the silent killer. And I wondered how to stop this killer disease before even more young people and others are diagnosed. The report estimated that nearly 160,000 people under the age of 40 are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes in the UK, with nearly 150,000 of those in England alone. Poor diets and obesity having been cited as the reason behind the rise, due to cheaper, unhealthy food now available, which is high in fat, salt and sugar. And of course, many more of us could well have diabetes without actually realising it. So, who better to call on to learn how we can minimise the risks of diabetes appearing to us and to understand the differences between diabetes 1 and diabetes 2, but Dr. Simon Carruthers, a local GP who will no doubt share with us some simple rules to live a longer, healthier life. Welcome to the programme, Dr. Carruthers, and you brought with you one of your patients who's got a very good story to tell us, Colin Perry. So, Colin, welcome to Beverley FM as well. Is this your first visit to Beverley FM?
It is, yeah.
So, Doctor, what exactly is diabetes?
Well, good morning, Terry. In simple terms, diabetes essentially is a state in which the sugar levels in your blood are too high. And as you've alluded to in the introduction, there are two main types of diabetes. There's so-called type 1 diabetes, which usually starts in either childhood or adolescence. And in this condition, you produce antibodies to the cells in the pancreas, which produces the hormone insulin, which controls blood sugar levels. Now, these antibodies destroy the cells which produce the insulin so that in the end you have no insulin production at all. Sugar levels rise quickly and the condition needs to be recognised so that the patient can go on to insulin treatment. Otherwise, they become very ill and can die as a consequence of not having their diabetes diagnosed. This is about 10% of all cases of diabetes, so a relatively small number. The vast majority, around about 90% of cases of diabetes, are type 2 diabetes, which occurs in older people and is due to a reduction in overall insulin production from the pancreas. And in addition, the body becomes resistant to the effects of insulin that is being produced.
So how do I know whether I've got diabetes at all or whether I've got diabetes 1 or 2?
Well, diabetes 1, as I say, is usually in children or adolescents, and they often become quite ill quite quickly. So the typical presentation will be they become very thirsty, are peeing a lot, are very lethargic, and are clearly unwell. Type 2 diabetes, it's somewhat more difficult. The symptoms can be very vague. Sometimes the patient has no symptoms at all, and we pick up the fact that they have type 2 diabetes purely on blood testing, which might be being done for other reasons. If they're symptomatic, they might just feel somewhat tired. You can get recurrent infections, such as in the urinary tract or of the skin, or thrush in either the mouth or the genital tract, but often it's very, very vague, so it can be quite difficult to pick up.
So how common is it then? I gave some statistics at the beginning of the programme, but is it as bad as it sounds?
It's probably worse than it sounds, Terry, actually, at the moment, it's estimated there are around about 5.5 million people in the UK who have type 2 diabetes, and of those 5.5 million, probably about 1 million of those have not yet been diagnosed. So they're walking around with the condition without knowing that they actually have it. As you've already mentioned, around about 170,000 people in the UK are diagnosed newly each year with the condition. And that number, to me, as a sort of jobbing GP on the ground, seems to be going up and up and up all of the time. I think most weeks I diagnose at least one new person with the condition. The problem for the NHS, of course, that this is now becoming a great strain on the NHS budget. They reckon that about £10 billion a year are spent by the NHS on purely type 2 diabetes, particularly managing the complications of the condition. And this, as it stands, is 10% of the entire NHS budget, which is spent on managing diabetes.
Now, I know that when you go to the hospital and that, and to the GP, diabetes comes up on about every tick list that they give you. Have you got this? Have you got that? Why is it important? You know, what's the risk if you don't discover it?
Well, it's really important because of the risk of the complications that occur as a consequence of having the condition. The complications are generally caused by its effects on the vascular system. The vascular system is essentially the system carrying blood around your body, and type 2 diabetes, or type 1 and type 2 diabetes, cause the blood vessels supplying every part of your body to become progressively, think of the best way of describing it, furred up, a bit like a central heating system in a hard water area. So that blood flow is restricted and reduced to all areas of the body. So larger blood vessels that supply your brain close down, so that you're at higher risk of stroke, you're at higher risk of heart attack. The tiny vessels in your eyes can block up and get visual disturbance and visual reduction and blindness. Similarly with the kidneys, they can stop functioning. And the blood vessels that supply your legs can fur up and block up, and you can get ulceration and infection and potentially amputation. So there's a lot of really unpleasant things that can happen as a consequence of having diabetes.
It's getting grimmer as we go on.
Indeed.
Shall we bring Colin into the conversation? Because Colin, got Colin Perry in the studio. Colin's one of the doctor's patients, and Colin's had diabetes. Which type did you have, Colin?
I had type 2.
Type 2?
Yeah.
And was it bad?
Yes, very.
Very bad.
Very bad, yes.
And you've obviously had some treatment, and the good news is you've probably overcome it, have you?
Yeah.
You fought the battle.
Yeah, I'm clear of it.
Yeah. So how did we achieve that?
How we achieved it is I went to see, I was going to see my GP, and every time I went, it was standard blood tests, one thing another, and we started off at one tablet a day, and then in the end, I was taking 6 tablets a day.
Yep.
Which equated to 2,184 tablets a year for it.
I can see you're a number cruncher.
Yeah, and I thought, enough's enough.
Yeah.
So I said to the nurse, I wanted to see another doctor, which I got to see another doctor. And I was told quite categorically, if the way it's going, if you want to see your grandkids grow up, you need to do something about it. So the way out of it was a case of, there's a book here, you need to read this book, which was Michael Mosley book, and immediately stop taking all your tablets. I wasn't going to sit there and tell him I was going to do it and walk out and think, no, I'm not. So I started, and it was just on lockdown. So we agreed the first 3 months. So I did it for 3 months, and I reduced it from 92 down to about 51, which was on this blood scale, but the doctor can tell you more about it than me. So then I went back to see him, had the blood test. Yeah, you're doing okay, but you need to get it down even more. So he asked me if I'd do it for another 3 months, which I did. I did it for the 3 months. I went back, I walked in, he stood up, he shook my hand, and he went, you're clear of it.
So first of all, what made you go to the GP in the first place? And secondly, what... You stopped taking your tablets, but being precise, what did you actually do to overcome the disease?
I got the book, and...
Is it diet, or...?
Yes, and I was told to read the book, and it was 800 calories a day.
Right.
Strictly 800 calories.
So when we talk of 800 calories, what precisely do we mean? What sort of food do they suggest that you eat?
Well, you cut all the things out, like bread, pasta, we put all the biscuits and crisps into a bag and give them to the grandkids.
Ooh, that's a bit hard.
And took every... Yeah, but if we're going to do it, there was no point in me saying to him, I'm going to do it, and then walk out and not going to do it.
Chocolate went out the window?
Everything. Yeah. Everything. And we adhered to it. The worst feeling is that when you start on this, A, you're not taking these tablets, so you're going into a bit of cold turkey with it.
Yeah.
And then your body starts to feel as if it's eating itself. So
kind of a withdrawal symptom from
your
tablets.
Yeah. So I lost 3.5 stone over a period of about 8 months.
Was that healthy?
Yeah. But the other thing I have to point out as well is, like, when you're taking all these tablets for type 2, invariably you get high blood pressure. So there's another 730 tablets on the top of that to go on it as well. Yeah. So it doesn't just stop.
Well, well done. And I'm delighted to hear a good news story.
Yeah.
So, Doctor, do you want to add anything to that story at all?
Yeah, so what Colin's talking about there is essentially what's been in the news in the last 2 weeks or so.
Great NHS diet.
Yeah, so the work has been done by Professor Roy Taylor, who's a professor of endocrinology and diabetes medicine at Newcastle University. Mm. And Michael Mosley, the late great Michael Mosley, I have to say, his book that Colin's talking about is the 8-week blood sugar diet.
Yeah.
And this was based on Roy Taylor's work, who essentially found through some fantastic research that it is possible to reverse type 2 diabetes, but to do so, you have to lose a significant amount of weight. And the weight loss that's required on average is around about 15 kilos for an individual. And that 15 kilos is really independent of what your starting weight is. So if you weigh 110 kilos, it's the same as somebody who might weigh 75 kilos. So 15 kilos seems to be the weight loss. And as I've just mentioned, the NHS so-called soups and shakes diet is a diet that or a diet plan that I'm, as a GP now, able to refer patients to, whereby the NHS funds actually a 12-week programme of an 800-calorie-a-day diet, which Colin has already mentioned, which is provided for you with dietetic support as well. And the whole programme is over a 12-month period.
12 months.
Well,
yeah.
So it's 12 weeks for the initial 800 calories a day, and then dietitian support for the subsequent 9 months of how to gradually reintroduce food into your day-to-day existence.
So getting down to logistics, how is the food delivered then? Every day? I think
a big box arrives probably once a month with packets of pre-made shakes and soups. And that's one way of doing it. Colin, much to his credit, actually took this on and did it before the NHS diet plan was available.
Yeah.
I have to say my personal preference is really for people to do it the way Colin did it, because on the way you learn how to eat differently, and that's the single most important thing.
Yeah.
I think it's fine for those who struggle with it, for the NHS to provide them with soups and shakes, but how much you actually learn on that particular journey, I'm not entirely convinced
by. I was listening to a radio programme of some people that had been on it, and one lady said she found it very difficult, actually. In fact, I think in the end she opted out because she hadn't got the discipline to go forward like Colin did and be successful with it.
Yeah, and what Colin has learned is life lessons on the way, and particularly in terms of modifying your diet.
Yeah.
And also, he does a lot more exercise than he used to do.
Yeah, well, I was going to come on to that, because one thing you mentioned was giving up chocolate, but I did read that dark chocolate is good for you. Is that correct?
Yes, that is actually right. Dark chocolate has within it chemicals called polyphenols, which are very healthy, and we may get an opportunity to talk about that in
weeks to come,
in future episodes.
I'm interested, you see, because my wife doesn't like dark chocolate, so I'm onto a good one here. But can you measure all this also by your BMI, your body mass index? Doesn't that have to stay around about 22 or something?
Is that not
important?
The fact is that people with a lower body mass index can actually get type 2 diabetes, which is something that's not recognised even by many doctors. Roy Taylor himself, the physician who has done a lot of the work on this particular subject, and as I say, has shown the reversibility of type 2 diabetes, himself has written an excellent book called Your Simple Guide to Reversing Type 2 Diabetes, which outlines a lot of these principles. And he actually points out in that individuals with BMIs 25 or less can develop type 2 diabetes. But what he also says that these individuals essentially are just too heavy for them. So you might look normal to the rest of the world looking at you, but what he points out is you should look at yourself as an adolescent. So if you were a very skinny adolescent, you were destined really to be a skinny adult. But in the environment in which we live, in which there are basically too many calories, and often too many calories of the wrong sort, you have turned into what is perceived as a normal adult, but actually you are too heavy for you. So if you have type 2 diabetes, essentially, however you look or whatever your BMI, you are too heavy for you.
Right. Point taken. So the important things are to obviously keep fit and to eat the right things. Another thing I read about was that a long fast between meals can also benefit you. I read about black or green tea daily. Is there anything in that at all?
Terry, but if there is...
Or is it just a myth?
I think that might be a myth, to be honest with you. I think, certainly, I think intermittent fasting can be beneficial for what is called your gut microbiome, which has a very significant impact on your health, and general health, that is. But in terms of type 2 diabetes control, the single most important thing is eating healthier, controlling portion size, and losing weight.
Right. It's a bigger myth then than the one that I told you about my brother with my kidney stones. He reckoned that if I put some lemon juice in a container of water and took it daily, they would dilute.
I'm not sure that would actually happen, but you can give it a try if you want to, Terry. Yeah.
But it is great, though, to learn from Colin that here he is, I'll use the word inverted commas, cured without the intervention of surgery.
Yes, or intervention of medicine.
Yes.
And as I said,
indeed, yes.
I mean, he's pointed out how many tablets he's been taking, and the cost of those tablets to the NHS would be astronomical.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as well as anything, he is saving the NHS hundreds of probably thousands of pounds a year.
Yep.
And if that was replicated across the number of people who have type 2 diabetes, the savings for the NHS the nation would be enormous.
Absolutely.
I think the other thing that you also have to remember is the cost in terms of lost working time. It's estimated that a 45-year-old man who diagnosed with type 2 diabetes has an around about a 50% chance, of having to finish work earlier than he would have otherwise planned,
right,
because of the consequences of the complications of diabetes. And of course, there's an economic cost for both the individual and the country when that happens.
Very interestingly, that will link in with, we have a financial advisor come and talk to us every 2 months, and we talk about insurance for serious illnesses, and nobody's going to have a serious illness, are they? But you just might, and you don't know you're going to get diabetes too and have to pack up work at 45 or 50, do you? So it's something that really needs considering by everybody.
Correct, and if you were wanting to take out life insurance with a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, the premium would be fairly hefty. Similarly for travel insurance as well, of course.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much indeed, Dr. Carruthers, and particularly Colin, for being willing to come and talk on air about his personal health situation. Yeah. It's been very, very much appreciated, and I think it does lead us on, Doctor, to another subject that perhaps we could cover in a future programme, that of perhaps eating for better health, because everything seems to be joining the dots to me.
I'd be delighted to, Terry, yes. I look forward to that.
Thank you very, very much. Most grateful to you.